So welcome to the Big Band era and to Harlem. In class, we're going to be asking questions that should probably already be occurring to you, like, Big Band era? Why did the bands get bigger? And, oh, isn't there this thing called the Depression going on? So why did the bands get bigger now? And what happens when the bands get bigger? There's a problem when the bands get bigger. When you listen to New Orleans or Chicago jazz, you notice the trumpet player, the trombone, and the clarinet player can all improvise at once. There are only three of them, and it's okay, so it's a little bit chaotic, but you can have three guys improvising at once. But as the bands get bigger, there has to be more organization. What we're going to call the big band problem is, how do you make music in the same way with a bigger band? So there are really two solutions to this. One is Count Basie's riff style solution. That's in another podcast. And the one we're going to talk about here, which is the Harlem or the New York solution. And so we're going to learn about three black band leaders from Harlem: Fletcher Henderson, Chick Webb, and Jimmy Lunsford. So you've been listening to Fletcher Henderson, who had the greatest black orchestra in New York in the early 30s. Like the other black band leaders, Fletcher Henderson initially wanted to create a great orchestra to play dance music. In fact, there's an ad on your screen from 1926, which is the ad that he answered to get his job at the Roseland Ballroom, which was a whites-only ballroom on Broadway and 54th, the most important ballroom in New York at the time. And the ad, notice it says, two versatile bands wanted. Two high-grade dance orchestras wanted for the evening session. Jazz bands will not be considered. So Henderson was from a middle-class black family in Cuthbert, Georgia, where he grew up, listening to Mozart and to Beethoven, not to rags or blues. He took a chemistry degree in Atlanta, and then he came to New York City to find a job as a chemist. But when he had no luck, he began working for a music publisher. Fletcher was highly organized, and he was good at setting up record dates and hiring musicians. Notice what a different pedigree this is from Louis Armstrong. But in fact, Henderson is actually going to be quite typical of the big band musicians: middle class, educated, with a knowledge of classical music. So with the new dance craze in the 30s, and 20s, lots of bands are being formed. And he's persuaded to organize a band for Club Alabama in 1923 of 10 players. Now, as it was for other arrangers, the problem for Fletcher Henderson was how to get a big band to swing so that it sounded like Louis Armstrong. So Fletcher Henderson hired an arranger named Don Redman, another trained musician. Don Redman went to Boston Conservatory. And Don began to write out lines in this hot style of jazz that was written out and harmonized for the whole section swinging together. In other words, he took a Louis Armstrong solo, or just a passage that Louis Armstrong might play, and he wrote down how that might sound, and then he wrote down the parts for all the different instruments. Here's how Benny Goodman described it. He said, quote, "The whole idea is that the ensemble passages have to be written in a more or less the same style that a soloist would use if he were improvising. That's what Fletcher could really do so wonderfully." So let's listen to a bit. Notice how whole groups of the band now play the same thing. So that's the whole saxophone clarinet group, what we call the saxophone section, all playing the same melody together. Now we have all the trumpets playing together. If you listen closely, you can hear the trombones are in the background doing what they would do in a regular New Orleans band. And then things shift and we have a new section. Much like in Jelly Roll Morton, we have sections, now we have a piano solo. Thank you. trumpet solo. So in a lot of ways, this is very similar to what Jelly Roll Morton was doing. It's organized, there are different sections. There are some solos, there are some ensemble passages. The difference is that the band is bigger, and so you can't just say, okay, trumpet, do this, trombone, do that. You've now got several trumpets, several trombones, and several reed instruments. So now we have four sections in the band. Instead of having one trumpet, we have a trumpet section. Instead of having one trombone, we have a trombone section. Instead of having a clarinet, we have a whole section of now mostly saxophones, although we often have clarinets and saxophones mixed together. But we call that the saxophone section. And then we still have the rhythm section, the section we started off with in New Orleans, with the drums, bass, or tuba. Tuba was easier to record, so we actually do hear tuba on a lot of these old recordings. And then either piano or banjo or some other instruments that make up the rhythm section. So this is one of the first things that we get from Fletcher Henderson. Fletcher Henderson really creates the standard size of a big band of three, maybe four trumpets, a couple of trombones, and then some saxes, two altos, a tenor, a barry, over a rhythm section. And this is no small feat. I mean, the big band is now a standard ensemble. Almost every high school in the country has a big band. It really is the first new ensemble that becomes standard in a long time, perhaps since the symphony orchestra, right? The choirs and the symphony orchestras that we have are European structures, groups of instruments that were organized by Europeans. The big band is an American creation, largely Fletcher Henderson, who standardized it, and it becomes an ensemble that we recognize as a truly American creation. Trumpet section, trombone section, saxophone section, and rhythm section. Another thing we get from Fletcher Henderson is this basic form, where we start now with the whole band, and then we have some solos and some backgrounds, and then we end up with another ensemble section. That he creates that as a kind of standard form as well. We've had soloists before. We called them ride-outs in Chicago, where the clarinet player might stand in front of the band and play a solo, and everybody else would shut up. But Fletcher actually organized backgrounds so that you might have a trumpet solo, but you'd have all the saxes or trombones doing something underneath. So that's something else we get that becomes a classic feature of big band jazz from Fletcher Henderson. And there's a third thing. That the way Fletcher thinks about the band is that he uses each section independently. So he thinks about trumpets as a group, trombones as a group, and saxes as a group. We sometimes call this antiphonal style, because what'll happen is you'll get the trumpets doing something, ba-da-ba-da-da, boop-ba-dee-ba-dee-da, and then the saxes will do something in between. So you get the trumpets going ba-dee-ba-dee-da, and the saxes will go boop-wee-ba-dee-da, in a call and response, and they go back and forth between the two. Let's see if we can listen to an example of this. So maybe you heard that, but let's do it again. So the trumpets do one thing, ba da do dee do dee, and then the saxes reply ba do ba do ba do with something else. Let's listen again. Listen to how the trumpets do one thing, and then the saxes reply with something else. Go back and listen to that a couple of times if you don't hear it, but let's go on and listen to the rest of the tune. So here it's almost the reverse. The saxes start off ba doo be doo 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 be doo 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 ba doo be doo 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 with the call, and the trumpets just have bat. So the saxes go ba doo be doo doo doo, and the trumpets go wah. So listen to that again, and listen to how the saxophones set it up, and the trumpets just interject all together. Is that the trumpet section and the saxophone and the trombone sections each act independently. So the saxes all do one thing, then the trumpets interject with the trombones, and then it reverses and something else happens, that you don't get one saxophone and one trumpet going off and doing something. Listen to some more of this. Ba-da. Trumpets are just doing that. Now they all play together. Everybody plays together for a little bit. It's like Louis Armstrong and 10 clones. They're all playing the same thing. That doesn't happen in Chicago jazz. And then we get a solo. In this case, Ben Webster playing the tenor sax. Notice that there actually is something in the background. The band is playing softly in the background. We still do that. It's called a pad. Okay, so one characteristic about the big band style is that it's bigger. The band is bigger. There are simply more instruments. That's obvious, but it's important to note. Another change is rhythmic, that in Chicago jazz, we generally have a two beat. This is Louis Armstrong in his Hot Five. Notice the tuba part, if you can hear it, is on one, two. Notice also the basic style. Trumpets playing the melody, trombones filling in, clarinets dancing around. This is clearly Chicago, New Orleans style jazz. But also has a two beat from the tuba. Now let's listen to a Fletcher Henderson recording from about the same time in 1926. And you can hear the band is bigger, but the beat is the same. Basic pulses are two. One, two, one, two, one, two, one, two. Pulse, pulse. There's a little break here. Now, if we listen to the Fletcher Henderson band playing 8 years later, we hear that the two pulse has been replaced by a four pulse. So instead of having one, two, or oompa, oompa, you know, kind of the polka beat, oompa, oompa, one and two, one, two. So the tuba only plays on the two beats, and then you have an upbeat. So you have oom-pa, oom-pa, oom-pa. Now we're going to get a four beat, where we have pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa, one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. We'll hear this when we do our drum demo, where you hear bass drum playing on all fours. But now you're going to hear bass or tuba playing on all fours. But generally, the beat has now been smoothed out so that you hear four even pulses. Just check your foot. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. Pulse, 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 pulse. You should feel four more even pulses. Instead of just feeling one, two, one, two, three, one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. That's part of the smoothness that we call swing. It's something that Louis Armstrong started, a smoother way of playing the rhythm, and it gets adapted by rhythm sections to a new style. So Fletcher Henderson recorded this piece, wrapping it up, in 1934. It has that four pulse. But as you can find in most biographies of Fletcher, it was hard for him to keep the band going. It was very hard for black bands. They couldn't tour in the South as easily. And especially once Benny Goodman started playing swing, white audiences wanted to hear white bands. So eventually, Fletcher has to close up shop, and he sells his music, the arrangements, the things that he's used to make this jazz, he sells the arrangements, the pieces of paper with the notes on it, to Benny Goodman. Now, Benny Goodman re-records this exact same piece, the same pieces of paper, in 1938. So listen again first to how it sounded with Fletcher Henderson. Now listen to exactly the same piece of music re-recorded by Benny Goodman in 1938. That's as much as I'll play here. You can hear both complete tracks on Blackboard. And I want you to go to the discussion board on Blackboard and tell me what you think. For a black musician in the 1920s and 30s, to play in the Henderson Band was the ultimate goal. He couldn't just play. He had to be able to read. He played at the very best white ballroom in New York. So Fletcher Henderson hired the very best musicians. His rhythm section featured an incredible lineup. Coleman Hawkins, Lester Young, Ben Webster, Chu Berry, Benny Carter. These are all huge names that you'll meet again. At one point, he even hired Louis Armstrong. Now remember, Louis Armstrong had not been trained like these other musicians in a conservatory. He didn't really read music at this point. So when Louis Armstrong arrived in the band, Henderson reports, quote, "Well, you know, Louis at rehearsal, he was perplexed by the trumpet part I gave him. It was a new arrangement of a melody of beautiful Irish waltzes." Now think, why would they be playing Irish waltzes? Because they're a dance orchestra. They're playing for white dances. Here's Fletcher again. "Now those parts were well marked with all the dynamics of the music. And at one point, the orchestration was indicated as triple F, fortissimo, with a diminuendo to PP. Now, in music, we use these Italian terms, so FFF means fortissimo, or forte, which is Italian for loud, and P means piano, which is soft in Italian. And we use these designations because back when Vivaldi was the biggest name in music, he was Italian, so everybody wanted to imitate the Italians. So we actually still use these Italian music designations in music because the Italians were the bomb in the 17th century. So here's back to Fletcher again. "The band followed these notations and was playing very softly, while Louis still played his part at full volume. So I stopped the band and said, 'Now, Louis, you're not following the arrangement.' And Louis objected, saying, 'But I'm reading everything on the sheet.' And I said, 'Louis, what about that PP? And Louis broke us all up by replying, 'Oh, I thought that meant pound plenty.' Well, there was no tension after that." While the downtown ballroom, the Roseland, was ruled by Fletcher Henderson, uptown at the Savoy, the band leader was Chick Webb. Chick Webb was only 4 feet tall. He had tuberculosis of the spine, and he died in 1939 of this. But he was one of the swinginest drummers of the big band era. And in fact, he can be credited with really inventing the modern kit and the way we play it. From 1933 to 1939, Chick Webb and his band were resident at the Savoy Ballroom in Harlem. So he had a terrific band and he was a great drummer. The band really had great swing at the Savoy. But he didn't really become well known until he hired a young singer named Ella Fitzgerald. Listen to the band and tell me what's different. First thing you should notice is the totally even four on the floor beat. Your foot should be going 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. Even when the band is soft, it's still swinging hard. That chug, chug, chug. Chug, 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 chug. The antiphonal style that we heard from Fletcher Henderson is still there. Solos with backgrounds. So it's basically the same Fletcher Henderson style of the trumpet section, trombone section, and the saxophone section going back and forth. But here, Chick Webb is a drummer. The rhythm section is rhythm section is really groovy. Let's go back and listen to the sections again and make sure that you can hear that. Listen to the saxes, how the saxes and trumpet sections are separated. Listen first for the saxes. Now let's go back and listen to the same passage and sing the trumpet parts. You hear how the two parts are interlocking? Two things never happen at the same time. You hear saxes, then saxes, then trumpets going back and forth. That's that interlocking style. So you should be able to hear the sections, the saxophone section and the trumpet section that go back and forth. That's a hallmark of the big band style. Now let's talk a bit about Chick Webb as a drummer. First of all, notice the band plays dynamics. They play soft, they play loud, and they swing the whole time. Even when you can't hear the drums loud, the band is swinging. It seems as if Chick Webb isn't doing a whole lot, but he's really stoking the band. We'll listen to other drummers, notably Gene Krupa with Benny Goodman, who swings hard, but he swings hard by playing loud. Chick Webb swings hard by playing softly. So as I said, Chick Webb was a great swinger. He could swing at any speed. He could play soft. He could play loud. But what he's most known for is what's called the democratization of the drum set. For most drummers up until now, the drum set consisted of two parts, the bass drum and the snare drum. And they were both played loud. Chick Webb adds other pieces. He adds a woodblock and a cowbell, and he hangs a cymbals from a gooseneck stand to get a richer sound. And but he doesn't just play all these things and play them loud. He would spend hours practicing to match the sound that he got from each one, so he'd get just the right texture and right volume. So he'd play one hit on the cowbell, then one hit on the snare drum, and he'd match the sounds. So listen to these drum solos. In other words, here is drumming as art, as more than just keeping the band together in timekeeping or playing a loud pulse. Here are the drums as part of the texture. So Chick Webb is both a great swinger and also someone who really is, in some ways, the first drum soloist, where he takes drum breaks that really add interest to the piece. Here's another one. After playing those fast, delicate breaks, he just drives the band on home. Even in these short breaks, he uses many sounds. The snare drum, the rim, the head, the small tom, the low tom, the small cowbell, a medium cowbell, large cymbal, small cymbal, a bigger cowbell, bass drum. He's a very, very, very creative musician. He just happens to play the drums. These are probably some of the first and best drum solos on record. Here's one more. Just for fun, tell me what instrument is taking this first solo. That was a clarinet solo. And now this next section features the sax section, but really the lead instruments are a couple of clarinets. We build an excitement. This is often called the shout chorus when everybody plays at once. That's Chick Webb and his band from the Savoy Ballroom. The third of the great Harlem band leaders is Jimmy Lunsford. Lunsford added ensemble discipline. They had incredible rehearsals, and partly because Jimmy Lunsford didn't play, he just conducted. He was in control of the band, and he stressed control. But there's an interesting paradox here. On the one hand, Lunsford stressed the band's behavior on stage. He wanted the band to be respectable, but they also put on a show. They were the world's greatest show band. In fact, I'll play some clips here, but you really need to look at some videos. So there's some videos on the Blackboard site. You can find plenty of them on YouTube. The band had all sorts of hand tricks, and they would throw their trumpets up in the air and that sort of thing. But on the other hand, Lunsford took what he did very, very seriously, and the band played a kind of art music. Lunsford had been an assistant professor of music at Fisk University. Yes, someone else with classical training. Great arrangements. And so there is a kind of art quality of the playing. Listen to this. This is Sleepy Time Gal from 1935. This is an early example of having the whole band actually play the same line together, tootie, but it's so tight you hardly even notice. But it's the whole band swinging. Notice also this, the beat. We're back to a two beat. Lunsford was famous for this anachronism, the big Lunsford two. One, two, one. Notice the tightness of the sax solo. Wow, that's a lot of notes. In other words, this swings, but where Chick Webb was so concerned with keeping the dancers on the floor and keeping the whole thing going, Jimmy Lunsford's band is a little precious. It does these fast, incredible things, partly because they can. So it's a kind of interesting paradox. On the one hand, they're a show band, they're throwing their things up in the air. They have this wonderful, too easy, danceable beat. And yet, they do all this weird stuff. It sounds a little like classical music. And as if to drive the point home, the Lunsford Band was famous for doing novelty numbers. Here's one called I'm Nuts About Screwy Music. Okay, so the introduction's a little odd, but then it seems to get going and just be a regular old 30s tune. But when the lyrics come in, the band seems to want to comment.
Screwy music. I'm screwy about nutty rhythm. I'm dilly over all silly melodies, crazy as a loon can be. I'm daffy about goofy tempo. I'm goofy about daffy changes. I'm dippy over all dizzy harmony written in a minor key.
So it's a 30s novelty pop song, but it's really artfully done. There are lots of references to other musics. Here, just for fun, is Jimmy Lunsford's version of Beethoven's Pathetique Sonata. So on the one hand, it's funny, or at least it should be funny if you know the piece. This was actually a pretty common thing to do in the 30s. It was called jazzing the classics. They're jazz versions of all sorts of things. But what's amazing is how artfully done it is. I mean, the saxophones are really having to play a lot of notes, and it still swings. So that's the Jimmy Lunsford Band. So you should know three bands now from Harlem: Fletcher Henderson, Chick Webb, and Jimmy Lunsford. Now, there's some things about Jimmy Lunsford that should make you ask some questions about where jazz is going in the 30s. And, of course, there's one other band from Harlem we haven't talked about, but there's another podcast on Duke Ellington. If you want to listen to the full, complete versions of the pieces in the podcast without me talking, they're all available on Blackboard. Have fun.